Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Welcome to Interchange. My name is Lisa Marie Napoli, and I will be your host for this evening's program. We have in the WFHB studios, we have Charles Thomas, who is the founder of My Brother's Library Incorporated, and also the director of a program called Big Share, which stands for Self-Help Apprenticeship Rewards Exchange. That's held at the Banneker Community Center. So Charles, thank you so much for coming into WFHB and talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to meet you and to hear about your program, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with the Bloomington community. First, for tonight's show, we're going to start by talking a little bit about you, Charles, and your background and what brought you into this work that you're doing that's so important here in our community, especially for the youth.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk specifically about My Brother's Library and the Big Share program. And then we're going to close with talking about how the program is developing and changing and what your goals are for moving forward.
Sounds perfect.
Okay, great. So let's start with you. Very curious about just what kind of previous experience do you have, and what brought you to doing this work with youth and mentoring? And we'll talk about the programs more specifically in a moment, but let's talk about you and your development with your work.
Okay. I started this program actually in Indianapolis in 2007. But before the program, we'll talk about me. Like you said, I was 5 years old when this is a long story. It goes back. I was 5 years old. I was living in Detroit. I was actually born in Bloomington. But I was living in Detroit. I was raised in Detroit from the time I can remember. I'm probably 2 years old or so. And growing up in the city, you generally see glass, bricks, buildings, cars. And so we once had a field trip to go to an apple orchard. You know, Michigan's famous for their apples. So our kindergarten class went to a apple orchard far off into Michigan. A part of Michigan I'd never been in. I don't exactly remember the town. But the owner of the orchard also, he owned cows. He had a cow farm, and he probably had about 450, 500 cows. This was my very first time seeing a cow. So it was very intimidating to see this large animal. And you know, my mom had always told me that McDonald's hamburgers were made of beef,
mm-hmm.
and that beef was made of a cow. And so, you know, the correlation started to come together in my head, and I was, okay, a cow and beef and McDonald's, and I love hamburgers. And I started to look at this animal, and I was realizing how large it was. I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, this is a huge animal. I'm 5 years old, so I'm maybe, you know, three feet, you know. It's a very huge animal. So I'm going home later from the, I'm leaving the orchard, and I'm on the bus with all the other kids, but I'm thinking about the cows. It's the first time I've ever seen one. So I'm thinking about the cows and the McDonald's, and so when I get to the house, I rush my mom with apples and cider and all the stuff you get at an orchard. And I asked her, one of the first questions was, Mom, how many McDonald's hamburgers can you get out of one cow? She laughed initially. And she said, I don't know. Why are you asking me that question? You have apples and, you know, what are you asking me that question for? You left an orchard. And I explained that the gentleman had cows as well. And she said, oh, okay, I see. So I asked her again, how many McDonald's hamburgers could you get out of one cow? And she said, I don't know, you know, pretty small. Cow's a big animal. I don't know, maybe 10 or 15,000. And so at 5 years old, of course, that is an overwhelming number. You know, it's a million, yeah, it's a million, 2 million. Wow, you know, so the number's just overwhelming. And then I think about how many cows this gentleman had. 15,000, 10 to 15 out of one cow, and he had about 450 cows. So these are astronomical numbers at 5 years old. You know, I'm just blown back. And so I'm, you know, my 5-year-old reasoning. I talk to mom about 3 minutes after she tells me this, and I'm like, Mom, I figured something out. And she's like, what's going on? And I'm like, you know, the guy who has the cows on the apple orchard, he has so many cows he could never eat them all. And, you know, that guy on the corner who always talks about he's hungry, if we could get the guy at the orchard to give the guy on the corner one cow, he should be able to eat for 2 years or maybe more. Mm-hmm. And she began to laugh. And initially that actually kind of hurt my feelings. And I think she kind of saw that, you know, in my face. And she's like, oh, baby, I'm sorry. I didn't, you know, what's going, you know. And she's like, I'm not laughing at you. I'm actually laughing because, you know, what you said is correct. That is right. That is so right. But that is not how the world operates. And with that comment, you know, this is my first mm-hmm. attempt at reasoning something out. And my mom tells me I'm correct, but that the world is not that way.
So what did that do? What did that do for you at the time?
It sent my head into a spin, and it was confusing because you're telling me I'm correct, but that the world is not correct. And so my perception of things around me became, I don't know if you could say skewed, but I began to look for the things that were not correct, were not right. And as I grew up, my mom was never really into the church. She was very much into God, and she talked to me about responsibility of what a man is, and these are the things that kind of motivated me. And so as I grew up and I saw my environment and the men in my environment, fathers, uncles, friends, just guys in the neighborhood, the scenarios that their lives, you know, took on seemed like nothing I wanted to have anything to do with.
So how did you create your life? What kind of work did you do as you grew up?
Well, I've done a lot of service work. I've done work with handicapped individuals and those less fortunate generally. I'm somewhat of a speaker, people say, so I've done some sales as well. I live off inspiration. I generally live off inspiration, and I move that way. Right now I have a couple of small companies that I'm working with. I have a t-shirt manufacturing company called Deep Speak Tees, and that's a local company, and products are sold here in Bloomington. I also have, I'm working with another individual here locally. We're hopefully starting a valet company, Bloomington Valet Company, that should be in August. And working, you know, I'd like to stay independent of a 9-to-5 job because of my vision for this program. That is my main focus. Once again, I've looked for what a man was supposed to be based on, mm-hmm. you know, what my mom told me a man was, and then I looked to the religions for what they said a father is and a husband is and a man is. And so that's what I've taken my standards from as molding myself, as well, of course, from my environment like everyone else. So, mm-hmm. right.
Okay, great, great. So could you tell us a little bit about what brought you to creating and founding My Brother's Library? And could you tell us what that is, too?
Well, My Brother's Library is my vision. I can tell you the story about how I got there as well. I was about 32 years old. I had been through two divorces trying to figure out my path. I was working for a company in Indianapolis, and I had began to give them ideas. They had made me a manager in the company. I was giving them ideas. The company was growing. And I grew very frustrated at a point in the company where I didn't feel like I was appreciated for my efforts. And with that, also two divorces, the father of four boys, it was a lot of, I'd say, emotional and mental pressure on me. And so I was at a point where in society, some people, you know, socially we know people, you know, they can't take it. They'll shoot their cell. They'll take pills. They have to end it. I felt at one of those points. And versus doing that, I went to the masjid in Indianapolis, which is the religious house where Muslims go and pray. At the time, I was a Muslim. And I went to the masjid, and I prayed on Friday with all the other congregational brothers. And I talked to God. I told him, you know, I don't know why I'm here. I didn't create me. And you being my creator should give me some idea of why you created me. What is my purpose here? You know, if you don't give me direction and tell me why I'm here, then the mistakes that I continue to make, you know, who's really at fault? Because I don't know why you put me here. And so this was a conversation that I had on a Friday, okay?
Okay.
Pretty serious conversation. You know, you're mm-hmm. talking to God.
Indeed, so, pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah. And so that happened on a Friday in the afternoon about 1:30, 2 o'clock. And Sunday, I was working for this valet company, and a homeless man walked up on me about 2 a.m., and he said, Allah sent me to you, and that I have been looking for you for a number of years, and that you have a purpose here. You have a mission. You have a job to do. And there began some of the auspicious things around my life and this program. So that is one of the initial sparks to what started this program. As I began to deal with this one individual, I will talk more about him later, but I began to deal with this one individual. I took him to one of the learned brothers in Islam in Indianapolis, and I told him to tell this gentleman what he had told me, because what you're saying is that God has, you know, sent you to me, and that I am something special. And that is somewhat, you know, overwhelming. So I wanted to, you know, have some validity and, someone to verify this as a reality. And so I took him to this brother, and he's known me for 12 years, the brother who I took him to see. And he asked him some basic questions about his belief in God and his understanding and his relation. And he, you know, and after that, I said, will you explain to him what you explained to me? He explained all that he had explained, that I had some very important work to do, and that the work would be world changing. And so I was expecting, you know, this Muslim brother tell me, oh, yeah, you know, he okay. He's just a little off. Don't worry about it. Leave him alone. You know, just, but he didn't say that. He said, well, you know, since I have known you, you've been, you know, a spiritually minded, you know, God-seeking type person. And so things like this are not impossible to happen. You know, nothing that he said is outside of what you know as reality. In fact, there are stories in the books about, you know, homeless men and the beggars and the vagabonds. And if anything that he tells you is outside of what you know is true in relation to God, then don't listen to him. But anything that he tells you that you know is in relation, then you should walk with this brother. And so...
Yeah, I was just wondering, did you get more specific guidance at this time, or was it something that had to kind of gestate and eventually develop in terms of the work?
I will be totally honest, I was in awe. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in awe for almost 2 months. You know, this was an overwhelming experience. It's almost unbelievable. Something you see in a movie or you read in a book. It's not something that happens to people every day. And so for me, it took a lot of, I'd say, confidence building in myself, because who does this say, you know, with this happening, who does this say that I am?
Big shoes to fill.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I'll be honest, it took me a while to get around the idea. And then I finally did, and I began to attempt to do the work. And the work first started in Indianapolis in Hallville. We had some help from the Chrisamore House up there. We did a cleanup. In fact, we have a program. Hopefully we will get started here in Bloomington. It is called Clean the Scene, and that is the program we started in Indianapolis. We did two cleanups over the weekend, and we got about 150 people to come out. Did a cleanup in one of the rougher neighborhoods in Indianapolis, kind of drug infested, crime, high crime area. And one of the highlights of that event was we had an 81-year-old lady who lives in that neighborhood, who's been living there for many years. She came on her cane, walked down the block into the park, deep into the park, and spoke with my wife. And she told her, You know, I'm so glad you guys are out here. You know, I really don't come out my house. I'm not comfortable coming out my house because it's usually drug dealers and drugs in the park. And so when I saw these kids out here cleaning up, it really inspired me and I felt so good and I just wanted to come and, you know, share that with you. And so for me, that was the most moving experience of what happened there.
Indeed.
Of course, the children, they were motivated. They were inspired. In fact, the neighborhood, actually, we saw people in the neighborhood begin to clean their own yards and to, you know, kind of build towards a better community. And the goal of the whole program is just to reconnect the people in the neighborhood, you know, the old with the young, so that they're not afraid of them, you know, and there's a respect and a balance between the community, you know, the members in the community. And we know each other and we are, you know, common unity. That is the base of community. Mm-hmm. So that is the goal of that program. And eventually I'd like to start that here as well.
Great. And how did My Brother's Library, like what exactly is that vision for you? I mean, this is, sounds like a piece of it.
Yes, yes, exactly. The vision is, I was once told by a friend of mine who's probably known in the spiritual community here. His name is Dennis Smith. He once told me that the vision is a God-sized vision. And so the goal is to have 24-hour community centers in the more impoverished areas of our nation, not only, you know, in this community, but, you know, we have poverty and crime and drugs and, you know, the breakdown of family as a consistent part of our American culture. And to accept it is to accept a doomed future. And so the goal with the 24-hour community center, you know, in areas like Detroit and Chicago and L.A. where this crime is becoming an everyday experience. You know, me growing up in Detroit, I saw a lot. And I'll say I saw it all and I did about half of it. So I know from experience that the environment leads you into a lot of the things that you get into, and that without opportunity, these children don't have a lot of hope, a lot of, you know, positive outlook. You know, if mom's on drugs and dad's in prison, who's there to teach the child? And so if we have these places where they can go that are open 24 hours, where they can get a meal and somebody who cares and somebody who's going to give them some direction and try to share with them and, you know, just support them and build them back up so that they can become, you know, a full person again. The goal for all of the programming is that these children reach their full potential.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we're just wrapping up our first section. We're hearing a lot about the background of Charles Thomas is here in the studio at WFHB on Interchange, and we're talking about his background, his inspiration, and a lot of his amazing adventures in getting to where he is with his work in starting My Brother's Library, and as well as a new program in town since November of 2010 called Big Share, which we will talk about next. So I'm Lisa Marie, and thanks for being tuned in, and stay tuned for our next segment of Interchange.
Support for WFHB comes from Bloom Magazine, a proud underwriter of community radio. Bloom has reinvented their website, magbloom.com, with an events calendar and a local restaurant guide. New stories, pictures, and video added daily. Online at magbloom.com. That's magbloom.com.
Hello, welcome back to Interchange. I'm Lisa Marie, and I'm here with Charles Thomas, founder of My Brother's Library Incorporated and director of Big Share, which stands for Self-Help Apprenticeship Rewards Exchange. And again, thank you, Charles. We've been talking about a lot of your inspiration behind the work that you're doing, and you had just started to give us a better picture of what your overall vision is of My Brother's Library and what you started in Indianapolis and what I assume you're wanting to bring here in Bloomington.
Right.
So could you share maybe a little bit more about, again, the impetus for My Brother's Library, some of your, I know you have some initial thoughts that right. you had about it, and then we'll move into the current program that's been going on in Bloomington with the Big Share.
Right. Well, the goal, like I said, is a 24-hour community center that operates generally free of charge. We are hoping to be supported by the communities that these centers will be, you know, manifesting themselves in. We would hope that the community would be supportive and that they would be the ones actually operating the facilities. What we want to do is have programming there. Of course, we'd like to have food. We'd like to have shelter, bedding, drug counseling, of course, social services, all of these things we'd like to have in a central place, a central location, so that if a child has to come here without a parent, without an adult, they can have all of these services provided to them and be connected to different organizations within the community that are able to provide some of the services that we cannot. One of the goals is to have professionals from all walks of life to be volunteers in the program. They have knowledge and experience that is valuable, you know, to these children, of course. The lack for me right now is not vision. It is just support for my vision. There are individuals throughout the community who I've attempted to make connections with, and I would really hope to be able to make those connections solid so that we can grow the programming. Because elevation for the children and them reaching their full potential is the entire purpose of the programming. We'd like to have science involved, scientists of all kinds. Of course, those who are aware of the plants and the horticulture in the surrounding area, whether it be in Indiana or Ohio. We want to have those who are aware of the circumstances these children deal with on a regular basis available to them.
What ages of children do you usually work with, or do you hope to work with more?
The age range we desire to work with is 11 to 17. Mm-hmm. What we're working with at the Banneker Center and the Big Share program, we're actually working with children from about 8 to 17. What we're doing there is a microcosm of the big program, of course.
I see. So let's talk a little bit more about the Big Share, because it sounds like a really great program I think people would be interested in hearing more about.
Okay.
So, in, you know, what do the youth experience as a part of being in this program?
Well, they have an opportunity to express themselves, for one, to share how they feel about what's going on in their lives, the education that they're receiving, what their dreams are. It's a venue for one to share. As you see, the name of the program.
Yes. The Big Share.
The vision is the attempt to secure apprenticeship programs with different groups and individuals, companies throughout town, as well as speaking commitments, tours of the workplace, so that the children can become familiarized with whatever it is that they feel is their natural aptitude. I believe that all of these children are born with something inside them that kind of guides them, just as we all are. Mm-hmm. And so my goal with the Big Share is to be able to kind of find out what it is and just nurture it. You know, if we can decide what you want to be when you are 10 years old, 12 years old, and start to feed into that now versus when you're 20, and you go to college and you have, you know, it's a whole different process. And so if you can begin to find your purpose, why you feel like you're here, what motivates you the most at a younger age, then by the time you're 20, you'll be a master at it. So that is the goal.
Great. So it sounds like a very nurturing and supportive environment for youth emotionally and developmentally, kind of spiritually as
that
well.
That is exactly, you know, we invite all walks of life to come and do presentations. We are generally attempting to give the children some insights into things that they're going to experience in life regardless. And if there is a parent or a educator or a scholar or, you know, any individual in the community who has a valuable lesson that they'd like to teach to the children, then we are welcoming them because all of this information is valuable. We are all teachers in some fashion or another. You know, like I was saying, when I was growing up, I watched my environment and I molded myself after the people in my environment. As I got older, I recognized that some of the things that I had molded myself to were not conducive to society or to my own benefit, to my own development. And so those are the things that I got rid of. And then I tried to apply things that I knew would be beneficial. And so that is the process of life. If we can show this to children at a younger age, then they can have that process occur before they're 38 like me.
So could you talk about some of the guest speakers you've already had in to talk with the youth?
Well, we have had a Christian pastor from Spencer. He came down and he did a presentation and talked, of course, about Christianity and some of the tenets and the golden rule. We have had a Baha'i speaker to come in and as well do a presentation on the Baha'i faith, and a Muslim who as well came in and did a presentation. We definitely like to have the kids to become aware of their spiritual selves. We are more than just physical beings. We don't want them to chase the material world as we have seen society do. It's leading to a place I don't think any of us want to go. We're not appreciating what's going on around us. And it's, you know, it's like if you don't do anything to stop it, then it just perpetuates itself. And so my effort here with this program is to have people just kind of look around and wake up. You know, look at what's happening. Do most of us feel like we reached our full potential? You know, I had this speech once in Indy where I asked this question, and there were successful people socially. Football players from the Colts and basketball players from the Pacers. And I asked the question, I said, do you feel like you reached your full potential, you know, in God's eyes? Because we were inside of a church. And most of the heads in that place went down. Most everyone, you know, kind of dropped their heads, you know, in a ponderance, like, you know, no. And the question is, if you recognize that you yourself did not reach your full potential, what would you be willing to do to make sure that the next generation does? And so that is all that I am asking in return for what I'm offering. You know, this is a program. It has, I think, universal application. There are really just three things that I believe these children need to learn. One is their body. You know, as humanity around the globe, no matter race or religion, we are humans. Our systems and our body have not changed since Adam. This should be common human knowledge. This should not be something only specialists know. This should be common elementary education from, you know, kindergarten through 12th grade. Mm-hmm. Imagine a generation that had that knowledge, you know, as a base knowledge, as well as math and reading. And then you take the environment. We all live in Indiana, but we go outside and we see trees and we don't know what they are, what they're for. You know, we have animals that live in this area. We don't know what animals live here. You know, we've become totally detached from the environment. And so one of the things that I feel like has been inspired in me is to teach these three things most importantly. One is the human body. Two is the environment. Because whether you're in Africa, India, or Alaska, you have an environment. And you should know what's in that environment. There's food and there's, you know, medicine.
Right. For an ecosystem kind of awareness.
Exactly. This should be common knowledge to humanity. Mm-hmm. And if we teach this to a generation, then it will become common knowledge. The third is God. I have studied many religions, many faiths, and many practices. In my own studies, from my own personal beliefs, I believe that all of the books that have been sent from God are different chapters in a really big book. And that we are all united. I mean, the world is becoming more and more connected every day. And so we have to begin to look at ourselves as a humanity. And as a humanity, we don't know our bodies. This is not common human knowledge. Our environment is not common human knowledge. And it's costing us.
Are there books or materials that you encourage the youth to read or that are a part of your program?
Well, there is a institute called the Ruhi Institute. It is a international educational center, and we have used books. We have books, the title, the title of the book is Breezes of Confirmation, I believe. And it is about the spiritual aspect of life. So we use those books, and we actually do have workshops and classes where we sit down and we talk about those types of things. Generally, we like to let the kids, be kids as well, because they are, it's a voluntary program, but it's somewhat of an education, and it's an after-school program. So we like to keep it kind of open, so it's not a, I'm in school again program.
Right. And do you work with a lot of volunteers?
Yeah, we do. We have a few volunteers. Well, I won't say a lot. We have a few volunteers because, for one, I don't think the community is fully aware that we are in existence. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that this radio program will, of course, help us with that. What I want to do over the summer here is some canvassing in the community so that they are aware and possibly find a spot where different individuals feel that they could fit. And that is how we intend to grow, through the community itself, because the program is for the community. And so if we can create a program where individuals in the community can come and take some of these programs and run them themselves, volunteer different, once or twice a month, move it throughout the entire community, then it's self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. And we can go to another part of the community and do it again. So that's one of the goals, to replicate it.
Okay, great. And when I hear about your program, it seems well-rounded, how shall I say, all-encompassing, mm-hmm. in many ways, sort of around the youth to really support them in a variety of ways.
Right.
So how do you see, I'm just like in comparison to other social service programs for youth, like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, or, whatever, how do you see your services sort of complementing or enhancing mm-hmm. some of those other programs?
Well, to be honest, I feel like the difference in the programming is the idea to be a 24-hour center. Mm-hmm. Because, in the areas where this program would fit ideally, you have, like I said, you have parents who are, in jail, on drugs, not attentive to their children's needs. And so at 2 and 3 in the morning, things happen. Chaos happens. Police call. Mom fighting with her boyfriend. Where do I go? Who do I talk to? Who do I connect with? Where can I leave my house and go somewhere and find comfort, knowing that someone will support me, listen to me, help me through it until the next day when the sun's shining again? And so that's the goal, to have that support base, voluntary. And I believe that these people already exist. I don't think it's something that we have to cultivate very much. I think it's something that we just have to share. And the people exist because I've met some of these people. These are people who, work with children because they care about the children, not because of the money that they make. Very little money comes out of this kind of work, but you care about the children. You care about humanity. This is our future. If these children are not nourished, we will be the ones who will pay. We will, our children will pay. And so socially, right now, there's about 3 million people in prisons around the U.S., and about 85% of those people will be released from prison in the next 10 years. And then you have all of these children whose parents are on drugs and far from the right path. What can we expect to see in our society in the next 10 years? This is not a far-fetched theory. This is a reality. This 85% of 3 million will be back out on the streets, and if they don't have jobs, they don't have direction, purpose, then we will be dealing with a lot rougher society than what we are now.
Right, right. So your vision for my brother's library and this overall picture that the Big Share program is a part of is this 24-hour community center, as you've mentioned.
Yes.
And I also, from my understanding, realize that the program, the Big Share with having speakers come in and giving youth the support they need, is being held at the Banneker Center, which of course isn't a 24-hour center,
right,
at least not at the moment.
Right.
So I'm just curious, what brought you to the Banneker Community Center, and was it location or?
Well, it was a little bit of a combination of things. When I was 16 years old in Detroit, I was just like all the rest of the kids in the community, kind of wrapped into self and, you know, what's the latest fad and, you know. But I was in a fight and I was stabbed several times, and my mom wanted me not to be in, you know, in that environment anymore. So she sent me to Bloomington, and I lived maybe 6 houses away from the Banneker Center when I came here. And eventually I did some programs, or I joined some of the programs over at the Banneker Center. I actually became part of a program called PLAY, which was Positive Leisure Among Youth. And so I was one of the founding members with that as well. But we did that, and I like the center. I like the ideas. I like the support that they have for the community. And when I came back to town, I'd actually lived in Indy when I started this program, like I mentioned. When I came back to town, I wanted to do some of the programming, and so I went to Parks and Rec and a few different places, and I was directed there. So it was kind of a perfect fit.
Full circle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, speaking of which, like I said, I was born in Bloomington, and I was raised in Detroit. And, you know, I feel like I'll be honest, I feel like if you took anyone's life and you looked at it, it would be very interesting. You could take anyone's life story and you could make a movie from it, and everyone would be, that was a great movie. Everyone would agree. My life has been pretty auspicious in some ways. When I came back to Bloomington and started the programming, there were many, many things that happened. As I told you, I was a Muslim. And there was a woman who came into the community passing out flyers. And on the flyer, she had the golden rule for maybe 7 different religions. And they were all the same, just worded differently. So when I saw that, I showed my wife showed it to me. And I was like, whoever gave you this, stay in contact with her, because this is what I attempt to teach to the children. You know, this is one of the things that I try to show them all the time. And the fact that someone else is aware of it is beautiful. So I want to meet this lady. So eventually I was invited to a prayer meeting, and we all went, of course. You just go and you say your favorite scriptures. And so that's what we all did. And I began to tell my story. And eventually I found out that there was a religion who believed all that I believed, you know, that was outside of my own religion. And that is the Baha'i faith. Not here to proselytize, but the beliefs that were held by the Baha'is in this community were so in line with the values and the goals that I had established for myself as reality. God cares about us all, and we are one human family. You know, a lot of this stuff was just inner beliefs that I held anyway. And so when I came upon this community and found out that there was an entire religion who believed that we should be educating the children, it was pretty auspicious.
Like a great fit.
yeah,
with deep resonance.
Yeah,
great. Well, we're talking with Charles Thomas, and we are speaking about the Big Share program here in Bloomington, based on his larger vision with My Brother's Library Incorporated. And you are listening to Interchange, and do stay tuned, and we will be back with you in a few moments.
Support for WFHB comes from The Breeze Bends the Grass, a brand new theatrical musical written by and starring Arbutus Cunningham and Krista DeTour. debuting at the Brown County Playhouse in Nashville, Indiana, Memorial Day weekend, May 25th and 26th. This world premiere will raise funds for the Brown County Art Guild, home to Marie Goff's estate collection of paintings by early 20th century Indiana artists, and also featuring the works of 50 contemporary member artists. For more information, you can visit browncountyartguild.org.
Welcome back to Interchange. I'm Lisa Marie, and I'm with Charles Thomas here in this station at WFHB. He is the founder of My Brother's Library Incorporated and director of Big Share program, which stands for Self-Help Apprenticeship Rewards Exchange. And again, we are in our final segment here of Interchange, and if you just tuned in, we've been talking, we got to know Charles pretty well in terms of his history. Born a Bloomington native, but lived in Detroit, Michigan, and had some impactful experiences that really guided his work in service, and particularly around youth. So we talked about the overall vision for My Brother's Library, which was one of a community, 24-hour community center, primarily in impoverished areas, that could serve as a real support for young people. And currently, we were just discussing the Big Share program, which is somewhat of a mentoring program where youth are nurtured and supported in a variety of ways, particularly around knowledge of their body, environment, and their spirituality or relationship with God in many ways. And so it's been a very fascinating conversation. Thank you, Charles, for your time. And so I'm wondering, this last segment, I'd really like to focus on sort of the development of these programs.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is kind of just explain what some of the programs will do under the idea of My Brother's Library. The Big Share, of course, is an acronym for Self-Help Apprenticeship Rewards Exchange. And that goes both ways. Those who volunteer to do the help, of course, you are rewarded by seeing your knowledge, passed down, and you gain the rewards of recognizing that you are helping people. It is an attempt to secure junior apprenticeship programs with different groups and individuals, as well as speaking commitments and tours of the workplace, to give the children some concepts and thoughts that are outside of the mainstream media. Most of these kids, you talk to them, they want to be a basketball player, football player, or a rapper. And these are, of course, great, but the reality is slim to none. And so the goal is to find their natural aptitude. And by putting professionals in front of them, we feel and imagine that eventually they will find something that they have a natural aptitude and interest in. And when we do that, of course, we would love to be able to connect with the workplace environment and have them to come in and follow this individual through the workplace to see exactly how they do what they do, the tools that they use. So that would be the big part of the apprenticeship with the Big Share. I feel like if we work together with the kids as our motivation, we can all change the world together. Just believe in the Big Share. Okay. So.
Okay, great. And there was another one or two?
Yeah, there are actually two other programs. There's two other programs that I'll speak about now. These are things that I have in the works. One is also called Clean the Scene. This is the one that we started in Indianapolis. This is a neighborhood cleanup and community strengthening program. The youth volunteer to take some level of responsibility for cleaning up the streets and the vacant lots in and around their homes. Of course, they are supported by the local businesses and churches, etc. After cleanup, staff will take volunteers to the restaurants in the local community and have lunch and dinner and, you know, kind of share and build, and just to build rapport and strengthen the community. So it gives the kids a little bit of pride in where they live. They see that they have the power to actually change something in their environment because the neighborhoods remain clean versus dirty, and they know that they've done it. So they see the power that they have to affect change. So that's the other program. That's called Clean the Scene. And, of course, there is one that we're hoping to get started early next season, and that is the Concrete Rose Gardening Team. Volunteers, of course, will plant flowers, vegetable gardens in abandoned lots, and, of course, in volunteer residence yards. This goes to help the city and, of course, the residents because there is food available, but it also cuts down on having to cut grass. And we're hoping to do the gardens in some of the elderly, elderly members of the community's front or backyards, because that would give to help to build the relationship between the youth and those who are, you know, in their elderly years. So that's one of the other programs. And I could go on and on about, you know, programming, but until we actually have enough unity to pull some of these things off, they're just ideas. So what I'm hoping from the community is that we could get some volunteers, get connected to some people who see the vision and can appreciate the vision and are willing to work towards bringing some of these things into reality.
Okay. So. And for listeners who are perhaps, you know, at home or driving in their car and curious about learning more about the work that you're doing with these programs, what's a good way that they can learn more information?
Well, you can contact me. There are several people you could contact, but I will actually give my my email, which is servant, S-E-R-V-A-N-T, underscore, of one, the number one, at ymail.com. And I'll be honest, I would much rather you call me directly. My phone number is 317-428-9575.
Okay, and again, we're speaking with Charles Thomas and talking about the different programs he has as a part of his larger vision of My Brother's Library. So in terms of the youth that you work with and the help and support that they'll get, obviously, and one of the questions I wanted to ask was, what do you think they need most? That's sort of a tough one to answer, perhaps, because you're giving us sort of a well-rounded picture of it. But since you're on the ground with the youth and, you know, doing the work right there with them, what stands out to you in terms of how to support them best? I mean, your programs obviously do that, but I was just wondering if you could give us any insights on what your experiences are one-on-one with the youth.
Well, it seems to me that there is a disconnect between the parents and their youth, that we have a visualized ideal of what our children will do or become or what we would like for them. But the reality is that there is a disconnect. And I believe that we as adults have a responsibility and an opportunity to connect with these children, because, you know, it was once told to me that, you know, children will do what makes, you know, what allows, if there is a group of people who will allow them to act as though they're adults and have a position and a voice, then they will go with that group because it's supportive. It feels like they're listened to and they're valued. And so most of the time what I hear is that my parents don't listen to me. You know, they don't really listen to how I feel about a thing. And so I believe that is one of the biggest disconnects, you know, not really gauging the emotional state of your child. That's what I would say is one of the biggest disconnects.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. And so in terms of developing your programs to fully support the youth in a way that you would like to see as a part of your vision, I know you had mentioned about canvassing to connect with people. How else do you see the program being able to develop to its fullest capacity? What are some of the support or the resources that would fall into place to make that happen?
That is a very good question. I believe that there are people who, I am not a man of means. I'm a man of vision and action. So I imagine that there are those who are in the community whom God has blessed, who recognize that the next generation is in need of assistance. And I'm hoping to be able to connect with possibly philanthropists or just different community organizations who are willing to support the ideals behind what we're trying to do here. The big goal, of course, is funding, always. You know, what we do now, I've done out of my pocket, and a few volunteers have helped with. And we've been doing this program for 2 years. Of course, when we have the kids, we like to feed them. So that would be great if we could get some community support, whether it be restaurants or maybe a food bank even, to just provide the food for these meetings. I'd like to be able to grow to 5 days so that we have a real effect by interacting with the children every day versus once or twice a week. I would need support from people, of course, individual, human manpower. So that is another thing that I'm looking towards being able to, you know, bring into reality. But what I'd like to say, I don't know how long we have to go here.
Just about 6 minutes or so.
Okay. What I would like to say is that I feel like I was put on this path by the Creator. You can call him whatever you'd like, Jah, you know, Allah, Jesus, it doesn't matter. I feel like I was put on this path with a purpose, and that, you know, I'll say beyond a doubt, I know that there have been those who have been connected to me just for the growth of this program. And so I don't feel like the issue is that it won't do what I want it to do. My biggest concern is how long will it take? You know, I know that it's the right thing to do. I know that it is best for us all. And it is universally, you know, applicable. This can, you know, go anywhere in the world and still have the exact same effect. The goal is to work towards building these children to full capacity. And all of us have the ability to add and to support that. So.
Okay. Very good. And I, you know, can tell by how you're saying it and how you're presenting it that this idea is very much uniquely something that has sort of came to you in inspiration and that you're sharing. Are you familiar with other states or anything particularly in the U.S. of programs that are similar that we can learn from here in Bloomington?
I know that there is a program in California called Cosmic Kids. And I'm not sure there is a female, there's a woman who founded it, but I'm not sure of her name. I've seen a video with some of the programming that she has. And the idea, I believe, is universal, getting the children to reach their full potential. And the way you do that, it only seems, is to talk to the kids. You have to interact and find out what they're interested in. You know, they have a natural aptitude for something, and we just have to find it as adults, because they will lead us out of this chaos that we are living in right now if we give them the right information. But if we perpetuate what we know has not brought us, you know, that's brought us where we are, and no one's happy with it, we can only expect more of it. So we have to do something different. And I believe the educational system, you know, we all know education is the key. But how do you get the right education to them? You have to individualize the education to the individual. So,
right. Okay. And are you looking for, in particular, like speakers and?
Always. So, you know, when I put that phone number out, that is for anyone who wants to get involved, from, you know, educators with degrees to neighborhood educators who just have a lesson that they want to teach, that they want to share with these children, or an experience that they want to share. Because one of the things that I find is that children, well, I'll say these junior youth, these teenagers, are acutely aware of truth, and they are acutely aware of sincerity in people. And so the lesson comes in that connection, you know, not in, oh, my degree, you know. You don't have to have a bachelor's degree to be a teacher. You don't have to have a master's to teach or a professor. You know, none of the prophets had those, but they were all teachers. And look at the world, you know. Their message got around the entire planet. And so that was without any degrees or internets. So the truth will manifest itself, I believe, in many, many situations. And like this Cosmic Kids program, the spirit of what she's doing is exactly in a line. Teach these kids about their human body in their elementary years. Try to find their natural aptitude and just to feed it and to nurture it so that they can grow and we'll see what they create. So.
Okay. And for those who may have just tuned in who missed your telephone number but are striking an interest in what you're saying, I'd like to share, you can reach Charles Thomas at 317-428-9575 for more information or how to perhaps get involved as well.
Okay.
So we do have a few minutes left to before we wrap up. Do you find that some of the youth kind of step in to help lead, or what sorts of changes do you see in the youth themselves kind of over time while involved with your program?
Maturity. I see them becoming more mature and recognizing that they do have an effect in their community. You know, just because you're a kid doesn't mean you're not affecting something. There was a tragedy here recently in Bloomington. And the reaction from, you know, some of the kids in the group was, it moved me. It moved me, you know, very much so.
From the loss of the high school student?
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. And so with that, I was able to see maturity and compassion and, you know, to the point where I've seen some of the children actually, you know, some of the guys, you know, shed tears in front of people and not be concerned with the social, you know, perception of me crying, you know. So maturity, emotional maturity, and just maturity, I could say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I were to ask you to paint me a picture of your ideal how you'd see this 24-hour community center, like mm-hmm. maybe what it would look like to just perhaps move the manifestation process. What might it appear to be?
You would see a very large building with classrooms inside, and you would see scientists teaching children. You would see rooms with electricity and energy being used, and you would see cooking classes and nutrition classes, a lot of laboratory work. You would see stretching and meditation. You would see a lot of education and books. I am really into books and I like to read a lot, and I guess I'm old school. I still like to hold the book in my hand. So you would see all of that. But the goal, of course, would be to see from this place come individuals who are affecting a change in their community.
Great. So about a minute left. Any closing words you'd like to share with us about the work you've been doing and the service you've been offering to youth?
Yeah, I asked God many years ago why he put me here. And he told me that he put me here because he wanted me to share all that I knew with the children. So that is the work that I do. If there is anyone within my voice who can hear this, who wishes to support me in that goal, I would love your assistance. We are always taking donations of all kinds, whether it be books, art materials, and of course, always funding. So that is the high point of what I like to say, and peace and blessings, and God be with you all.
Great. Well, thank you. We just heard from Charles Thomas, founder of My Brother's Library Incorporated and director of the Big Share program here in Bloomington. So thank you again so much for sharing your stories with us today and the great work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And thanks to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Interchange is produced by Lewis Malone. Executive producer is Allison Bektesh. Original theme music by Jamil Effiam. And do stay tuned. We have Isan in the station here giving us the best in jazz this evening. I'm Lisa Marie. Thanks for tuning in to Interchange, and do come back next week. Until then, take care.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.